across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
On this first day of February 2024, it's a Thursday morning. Nice to have you along across the Civic Media Radio Network. If you're joining us later on by podcast, thanks for subscribing. Nice to have you along. We will be talking to congressional candidate Rebecca Cook coming up in just a moment, part of three interviews that we're doing this week with the candidates. We talked to State Representative Katrina Shanklin yesterday. We'll talk to Eric Wilson tomorrow. Becca Cook coming up in just moments, but first, Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot joins us. We had quite a bit of dense fog in parts of Wisconsin today, in part because those temperatures are still on either side of freezing here, 30 here on Lake Wissota, 21 in Hayward, 28 in Park Falls and Wausau. Green Bay is at 33, La Crosse 32, Wisconsin Rapids 34. Oshkosh is at 36 right now. Madison, 32. Waukesha, 34 degrees. Brittany, good morning. Tell us more about what we can expect across Civic Media land today.
Absolutely. So first things first, as you head out the door this morning, because of that fog and those below freezing temperatures, you're going to be scraping ice off of your car. It is a frosty morning out there, but high temperatures will once again be record-breaking. This time, it looks like in towards Eau Claire, La Crosse, Green Bay, Fond du Lac, even into Kenosha, could see record heat again today as temperatures soar to the upper 40s, and that's where the records were sitting at as well. So we'll keep a close eye on that, but otherwise today, we'll start off with some sunshine once that fog burns off. The dense fog advisory expires around 10 to 11, depends on where you live in the state. And we'll see a little bit of sunshine. We'll get cloudy tonight as a cold front pushes through and drier air moves in. So that's going to stop the fog there for us. And we'll have a beautiful sunny day tomorrow as well.
Very nice, Brittany Merlot. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. And then as a reminder today, we still have much more to come. We have Dr. Kristen Lyerly with us now, and she'll be joined by State Representative Jody Emerson coming up at the bottom of the hour for our Women Win Wisconsin segment. But right now, we're very happy to be joined by Rebecca Cook, candidate for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District. Becca, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Good, good. So nice to have you here. Again, we talked to Katrina Shanklin yesterday, Eric Wilson tomorrow. So folks listening will hear some of the similar questions so that we can hear what you're up to or what you're thinking on all the issues that are happening today. So I'll start with the same question I did with Representative Shanklin yesterday. And that's first, just tell us what you've been up to, life of a congressional candidate, you know, the travels, the endorsements, the events. What has life been like across the 3rd CD for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a really busy time. You know, we've been doing a lot of outreach to folks from all around the CD. I think you'll remember last cycle when I ran, we had a 19 county district tour, which is something that we're ramping up to do here in the spring. So working to build those relationships and connections all around the third so that when we come back and start to put our roundtables together and all of that good stuff, folks are ready. This weekend, I'm going to be in La Crosse. I've been a small business owner for a number of years. I run a nonprofit that supports women entrepreneurs throughout 18 counties. And so on Saturday, we're doing a Main Street walk downtown and having a roundtable with some small business folks here, top of mind, what some of their biggest issues are. You know, endorsement wise, I've been continuing to get support from local electeds, as well as earned the support from Communication Workers of America. I come from a union family, so having that kind of union support is important to me. My brother's a union firefighter down in Madison, and my sister works for the teachers union over in Minnesota, Education Minnesota. So I also, at the end of December, received the support from the House Blue Dog Coalition, which is comprised of younger members of Congress that have, you know, more working class backgrounds like myself, and that represent rural districts and districts that, you know, Trump has been historically winning, but we're working to change that. So let's
get into some of the issues that are coming up now. Perhaps let's start most importantly for what's happening this week in Washington. And that is for all of the talk about a crisis at the border, something that Derek Van Orden, the Republican incumbent, talks ceaselessly about. He also said the other day he wants no part of the current activity that could lead toward a bipartisan border security agreement. What's your take on how this bipartisan deal is being torpedoed by former President Trump and Derek Van Orden willing to go along with that.
Yeah, I think we have something ahead of us that Trump doesn't want to be passed before the election because he wants to use it as more continued political theater. And it comes back to, you know, who gets credit for what. And I think we've got something that has bipartisan support that solves a lot of the issues that we're seeing in the surges at the border. The issues that we have with fentanyl. I know that Senator Tammy Baldwin is somebody that's brought solutions to the table with the Stop Fentanyl at the Border Act. And so, you know, it's interesting to me how much Derek Van Orden goes off about the crisis at the border, yet when there's an opportunity, Mike Johnson won't even bring it to the floor. So,
well, we certainly have heard his take on these issues. On just Sunday, for example, he tweeted at 10:28 in the morning, 10:37, 10:41, 10:54, 11:19, 11:37, 1:36 in the afternoon, 1:38 in the afternoon, 1:41, 2:15, 2:42, 3:58, 4:56, and 5:07 p.m. So if you were wondering where your congressman was last Sunday, just head over to your Twitter machine, and including language that we can't use on the radio. Again, you know, small minds, small vocabulary. So that's where he's getting his issues from. What are you hearing in terms of the issues as you get around and talk to people not addicted to social media?
Yeah, well, I'll say that Derek is certainly connected on the sphere and the, you know, the bubble that is Twitter and now X, and that's not where our constituents live. I think that that's where a lot of people that like to, you know, stir the pot live. When I'm hearing from everyday folks in Western Wisconsin, like I think one of the top things, especially in the Eau Claire area, we just had the closing of a couple of different hospitals and clinics that have significantly impacted what will and not felt right now, but will healthcare access in this region, and immediately has impacted jobs here in the Chippewa Valley. And so I had an opportunity in the last week to come out and meet with some of those workers, some that have been, you know, working with HSHS for over 30 years, folks that work with Ellie Phillips and are concerned about the loss of our behavioral health beds. There's already not enough. And so many folks come to Eau Claire to get their healthcare. And so, you know, I'm really connected. I'm wanting to be connected to local issues, the things that people are most concerned about. It really comes down to those kind of kitchen table issues. Are they going to be able to afford healthcare? You know, especially when we have, you know, one of our local labor and delivery Menominee has closed. Where are you going to have babies? You know, people are really concerned about things like that. And so that those are some of those issues that I've been hearing from folks lately.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because this is like, hello and good morning.
Good morning. It's nice to meet you. I've never gotten to meet you formally. So
yeah, we've texted back and forth a little bit, but yeah, here we are together talking about hospital closures and maternal health deserts. And actually one of my dear friends is an OBGYN doctor in Menominee. So she was directly and profoundly affected by this because she knew that she wasn't going to be able to care for her patients. This is fallout from our broken healthcare system, from our inability to appropriately fund healthcare. We have the most expensive healthcare in the world and the worst outcomes. And a lot of this is tied to what we're doing with women's healthcare. How is that all playing out in your campaign in particular?
Yeah. You know, I think with the overturning of Roe v. Wade, I was a candidate last cycle when that happened, and folks were outraged and continue to be outraged. I'm somebody that supports women's access to abortion and fully support reproductive freedoms. It's not my job as a legislator to be making those decisions in a doctor's office with a woman and her husband and provider. And, you know, I know that Dr. Lyerly, you've been a significant advocate across the state and have heard from a lot of folks about those patient outcomes. And, you know, something that I'm going to be fighting for when I get to Congress to codify Roe v. Wade into federal law. And I think it's something that's top of mind. I mean, when I'm talking with folks, especially young women, when I'm on universities and we have six college campuses and universities in the third CD, that's a top issue. That's one of the things that they're most concerned about. We saw how Judge Janet Protasiewicz ran really on that particular issue and won in the third. It's not something that, it's something that women and men care about all across the state.
Let's move over to ag issues for a moment. Again, we talked to Representative Shanklin about this as well, and Eric Wilson tomorrow about ag policy. The farm bill itself was punted for a year. Congress chose, or the Republican-led House chose, not to even address any kind of significant agricultural issues this year. And I wonder your take on what role Derek Van Orden has played as a member of the House Agriculture Committee. That was a plum committee assignment. What's your report card on how he's performed for all the farms in the 3rd Congressional District?
Yeah, well, as someone who is a dairy farmer's daughter, I grew up in the Eau Claire area, so I grew up showing cattle and 4-H. And so for me to be on the Ag Committee is something that I aspire to be, and actually to get a farm bill passed that works not just for large ag conglomerates, but small to mid-sized farms is something that's really important to me. And we've seen Derek Van Orden go to DC and declare himself the cheese king, but then really get nothing done for working farm families. And that's really frustrating. I think you've seen so much political theater from the far right in their inability to get anything passed that really supports working families. And the farm bill is just another example of that, of pushing it off into this new year. And meanwhile, folks are waiting for people that are actually going to get something done.
And what kinds of things would you like to get done that focus on agricultural production throughout the 3rd Congressional District and throughout Wisconsin?
Yeah, so I think you've seen a lot of hyper-consolidation in agriculture. You know, you look at the beef industry and you've got 4 main beef processors. And you don't see a lot of those profits going back to small and mid-sized farms, what I kind of alluded to before. And so, you know, I think really working to enforce antitrust laws so that things don't get so big, right? You've kind of seen how this has worked in the brewing industry. You know, you had a lot of big brewers, and now microbreweries have really emerged to be able to support regional and local economies. Like, how are we supporting small and mid-sized farms so that kind of support and dollars stay in our region?
About promoting competition, which can only be good for local marketplaces. Rebecca Cook, candidate for Congress, is our guest for this half hour on Up North News Radio, and we'll continue that conversation coming up in just a moment. First, a reminder that you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com, click newsletter in the top banner, and we'd love to have you as a subscriber. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Thursday morning, the 1st of February, when you're here, you're up north. Back in a bit. Yes, this is the part where the elderly host again says, can't believe this album is 30 years old already. Thank you, Greg. Rebecca Cook, candidate for Congress, is with us today, part of 3 candidates in the 3rd Congressional District primary that we're talking to this week. We'll talk to Eric Wilson tomorrow at 7:05. And again, hear more about the current incumbent, Derek Van Orden, the Republican, who is in this first term, potentially first and only term, depending on how things turn out this year, because of the retirement of longtime Democratic Congressman Ron Kind. Now, one of the issues that's been facing this Republican majority in the House over and over and over and over and over again is the threat of a government shutdown. And again, they will be talking about it in a couple of weeks here. If you were in Congress right now, Becca, well, how would you either be advising Congressman Van Orden or acting to stop kicking this can down the road?
Yeah, I mean, look, we've got to keep our government open and fully funded. You know, you're seeing the Republican Party and the far right leadership really hold our country hostage when we're not keeping our government open and fully funded. And I think that it really takes people that are willing to work across the aisle to be able to do that. And that's something that I certainly will do when I'm elected to Congress. We can't hold things up like this that are critically important for our country and for our economy to continue to operate.
We talked a little bit earlier about healthcare as a major issue for Americans. And we saw this year record signups for the ACA. In contrast, we know that Donald Trump and his cronies want to shut down the ACA, and they have some sort of mysterious plan that they're not able to actually verbalize. Where do you stand on healthcare for individuals in this country? What would you like to see?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm somebody that also relies on the Affordable Care Act for my healthcare. As somebody that was an entrepreneur, there's a lot of entrepreneurs that I know do as well. What I think has been interesting, and you look at Derek Van Orden's website, and he has a one sentence solution to healthcare, and that's dismantling the ACA. But there's no solution to that. So it's like, if there's an alternative option that better serves Americans, like, I'd love to see that. But all it is trying to shut down what already exists and that's already working. I think if you'll remember how long it took to get the Affordable Care Act passed, how many votes came to the floor for it to work. I think there's a lot of ways to improve it, but to totally scrap it, I think is a miss on elected officials. Things that I've looked at, you know, my parents go to Mexico on a trip once a year because they're retired, and Medicare doesn't cover vision, dental, and hearing. So they go there to get their dental work done because it's cheaper to do there than it is in our own country. It's cheaper to go take a trip to Mexico to get their dental work done. So, and when I talk with folks about that, about expanding Medicare to cover vision, dental, and hearing, the things that deteriorate as folks age, it sounds like common sense. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that we can do to fine tune what exists without doing an overhaul to the system. And just doing away with the ACA is not the solution, especially when there is no backup idea. Your idea is bad and that's it. So.
Well, that's because most of the time the answer from Republicans has been to privatize certain things, privatize more private health insurance. The same could be said for Medicare plans and for Social Security. And this week actually marks the 84th anniversary of when the first Social Security check was paid out to a woman who was a legal secretary in Vermont, I believe. She retired at age 65 after paying into Social Security for the first few years of its existence. And she was able to not have to worry about poverty in her retirement, which, by the way, went 35 years. She passed away at the age of 100, and Social Security was there for her from the very beginning. Becca, people always talk about whether Social Security will be there for them. What would you like to do, or what should the Republicans not be doing in order to make sure that Social Security stays around for another generation?
Thanks for your question, Pat. Yeah, I think, people like Derek Van Orden have talked a lot about dismantling Medicare and Social Security. And just like the story you gave, I mean, it's something that aging Americans really rely upon. It's something that you pay into your whole life. And it's something that we've seen work. And it's something that I'd like to see continue to work and be improved, and that we continue to fund and support. So
what have you been... Have you been asked about your position on the cap for payroll taxes for Social Security, which right now I believe taps out at $168,000 a year? In other words, if you're somebody that makes, you know, north of $20 million a year, and there's an increasing number of people like that, they reach that $168,000 cap by January 3rd or 4th, and they don't pay in for Social Security for the whole rest of the year. Senator Tammy Baldwin and others have spoken out about raising that cap to a certain degree. Is that one thing that you would support to strengthen Social Security?
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense. It's not something that I've been actively asked about by a lot of folks. I think there's just a lot of fear in general of those kinds of programs going away. And I think that kind of concern has been more what I've been hearing from folks, not necessarily that salary cap. But I think Senator Baldwin is usually onto something when she's, you know, supportive of something like that. And so it's something that I would definitely take a look at for sure.
Mm-hmm. In Congress this week, there's this focus on possibly impeaching the Homeland Security Secretary, Alejandro Mayorkas, who is being charged with failing to implement immigration laws, even as House Republicans are, as we talked about earlier, refusing to change immigration laws and border security and things like that. I get the sense that in all of your conversations around the 3rd District, let me ask this. How many times are people bringing up the need to impeach the Secretary of Homeland Security?
No one has brought that to my
attention. It is zero. Okay, it is. Okay, that's good. Okay. It does say something about where their priorities are, though.
Right. Well, and I will tell you one thing. I'll tell you one thing that folks are bringing up to me is their concerns around like childcare and one bill that went through actually yesterday, the tax bill that expands the child tax credit is something that I was excited to see that had bipartisan support and that went through the House. And so, you know, those are the types of things that I'm hearing from folks, things that are going to help them, you know, have the kind of childcare that they need to be able to show up to their jobs, to be able to afford to pay it, you know, and it, you know, increases the refundable portion of the credit. And it also allows more than one child. It increases that as well to be covered. So.
Oh, all right. Well, then, and finally, then in wrapping things up, I just want to find out more about whether, you know, how you think folks could best reach out and learn what you're doing, whether it's on social media or particular events or a website.
Yeah, so our website is Cook for Wisconsin, all spelled out, COOKEFORWisconsin.com. So you can check out my priorities page. It's something I wrote in my own words. So if I didn't talk about an issue that's important to you, please take a look at that. And then social media, we're really active on the ones that regular folks use, I would say, the most, Instagram and Facebook. So follow along what we're doing. We try to keep everybody up to date about where we're going to be. And we'd love to see you as we're starting to pick up our county tour here in the spring. So definitely reach out to our campaign, which you can do through our website at cookforwisconsin.com.
Very nice. Rebecca Cook, thank you so much. We appreciate your time. Know how busy it is and look forward to getting another update very soon.
Awesome. Thanks so much, you two. And we'll see you again soon, I'm sure.
You bet. Great to see you back. Thank you. Coming up next, Kristen is back along with State Representative Jody Emerson for our Women Win Wisconsin segment, all part of Up North News Radio for this Thursday. Back in just a bit.
You can't go forcing something if it's just not right.
We're going to get to our Women Win Wisconsin segment in just a sec. Just a reminder for those of you who just heard us talking to Rebecca Cook and Katrina Shanklin yesterday. Eric Wilson will be our guest tomorrow at 7:05 as we talk to the candidates running in the Democratic primary this August for the 3rd Congressional District. So many more races to follow, but very few as big as this one. Beyond, you've got your presidential race, your U.S. Senate race, and then this is going to be one of the most watched races around the state. So far, unless anything happens in any other congressional district, Dr. Lyerly, that we might want to be focused on, you know, the 5th or the 1st or something like that.
The 8th, maybe. We are kind of ramping things up over here in northeastern Wisconsin. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have a lot of people expressing interest, even though we don't know where legislative lines are going to be drawn yet, but they're not waiting.
No.
They're getting ready.
Yeah. We have to get ready. We know what's at stake in November, and we know that this is the year of the woman, which is why we are highlighting women in this segment every Thursday morning at 7:30. And next week, we will be joined by two other extraordinary women. So the three of us sat together on Tuesday night in Green Bay at the Tarleton Theater, and we talked about all of the different ways that Mike Gallagher is just failing us. You know, Becca mentioned a little bit about where Derek Van Orden is not serving the people of Wisconsin. That's happening all over the state, and it's certainly happening here in northeastern Wisconsin. So next week, we're going to have Kelly Peterson and Alicia Saunders joining us. The two of them and myself, we're all thinking about, like, who's going to run for Congress over here? We didn't have a candidate at all 2 years ago, but this year we've got three people chomping at the bit, at least three people, and we are fired up and ready to go.
Absolutely. And we are still hoping possibly to talk to Representative Jody Emerson. We know that she may have another commitment as well, so we'll be on the lookout for her arrival here. But in the meantime, we can get back to a topic I started talking about in the last hour on behalf of one of the state senators up your way, Eric Wimberger, and some comments he made yesterday in committee about a bill actually a resolution, actually, which in so many words, it's being billed as, well, it would prohibit all forms of discrimination. But what it would really do is prohibit anything that might provide incentives to historically marginalized groups. And a resolution like this, all it really says is, well, you know, systemic racism has been solved. You know, there are no more problems out there. We don't have to do anything that addresses biases or shortcomings or poor outcomes or whitewashed history lessons. We just want to be able to talk in acronyms, CRT, DEI, BLM, and things like that. And to that lexicon, we added something new yesterday, thanks to Senator Wimberger. And Greg, if you still have the clip, I'd like to hear the phrase that he used in talking about the people who have consistently over time been fighting against systemic racism and have been fighting for social justice.
One of the main effects that this bill will have is that it will put race hustlers out of business, and they will stop this graft on on people's suffering. So racism is a problem, and it probably is something that will exist in the ether, and it will never go away to a degree where we can manage it if what we do fundamentally in our policies is very consciously decide that a black man ought to get what a black man deserves and a white man ought to get what a white man deserves. And then we have some sort of lords in institutions deciding if things are shaken out right and equitably. The focus needs to be on the effects of these things, and then obviously work on education on the other side of it. But to reaffirm and re-entrench all of the fundamental principles of racism by talking about how one person deserves one thing or another based on their race will never solve the problem.
Yes, Senator Smith. You just used a term I've never heard before, and I'm going to ask for your definition. What's a race hustler?
Race hustlers would be all those people who sell seminars and like Al Sharpton.
So race, but what makes them a race hustler?
Profiteering off of it.
I see. Interesting.
Profiteering. Okay.
I love Senator Smith's comment. I see.
Interesting. And I have to admit that I had to, while I had my Twitter open, I just simply put in race hustlers. And all of the searching that followed after that was basically the human gutter out there, in terms of there were things that were anti-Semitic up there, racist, everything else. I think the senator might want to rethink the definition, because I certainly think I know a race hustler when I see one. And to me, that would be people that want to pretend that racism doesn't exist anymore and that we can just whitewash all of these things.
It's very interesting to see a white man of privilege having this conversation in a vacuum, you know, just sitting high on his throne and using these words that the GOP does very, very well. They find these words, they weaponize them, and they use them out of context in very powerful ways that pull people along and really continue to divide us and stoke that hatred and that culture war. There's so much work we need to do here, and our society is changing. This is not the direction that we are naturally going in, and this is not the direction that is healthy for us as a society. I'm embarrassed, frankly, that he's my senator.
And so that's part of the reason I wrote up an editorial that's going to be going up over on our website to remind people that there are positive things to look at for Black History Month. There are I provide links to all kinds of events, presentations, films, luncheons, dinners, fairs, gospel choir performances, a women-owned business expo, art exhibition. No shortage of ways to commemorate, celebrate, or maybe for folks like Eric Wimberger, just gain appreciation for Black History Month, where you can have, you know, great discussions. You can have spirited debates. You don't have to agree on everything in terms of the path going forward. But what we shouldn't focus on is what's happening under that Capitol dome in a place where they went like 4 or 5 years without being able to pass a simple resolution commemorating Black History Month because Republicans wanted to dictate to the Legislative Black Caucus who could and could not be mentioned in such a resolution. It's the kind of thing, again, it's not that it's unimportant, but I just want to remind people there's so much more positive that happens out there about Black History Month as well.
Hey, I get so frustrated, Pat, because they spend so much time obstructing. Like, look what's happening on a federal level. We talked with Becca Cook about impeaching Secretary Mayorkas. They're spending so much time and energy doing all of this punishing and blocking and negative messaging when there are all of these problems. You know, look at what's happening at the border. There are issues there. We need immigrants to come into this country and to continue to grow America in the direction that America is founded on. But they don't want to solve the problem. And they especially don't want to solve the problem now that Donald Trump has come in and said, let's not solve this problem right now because there's a strategic advantage to leaving it here as an open wound as we're approaching this election season. Like, no, we don't have time for this. We are Wisconsinites who believe in common sense. So enough with all of this ugly rhetoric and this ridiculous messaging. Let's put our heads together. Let's figure out how to compromise and move things forward so the state works for Wisconsinites, not just for the people in power.
Hey, in terms of the issues that that we're all going to be talking about this year, healthcare always rises to the top. And I don't know if you heard the story I did right at the top of the show about the 63-year-old man who robbed a bank in Green Bay a year ago and pleaded guilty yesterday and, you know, admitted, again, what he said at the time, that he very quietly, very politely robbed this bank and then stood outside the bank waiting to be arrested so that he could get healthcare, because he has no insurance and deals with multiple health issues. I'm frankly surprised it doesn't happen more often, but not at all surprised that it happened in this case.
People are desperate. What are you supposed to do when there's nowhere else to turn? And we have just segmented off parts of society where, you know, you don't get that hand up anymore. I grew up in a household where we were on food stamps. We received so much public assistance because we lost my dad, the bread earner, the breadwinner in the family. My mom was working for minimum wage. If we didn't have that little bit of help at that point, there's no way that I would be here doing what I'm doing right now. And so many of us have stories like that. That's what America is about. It's about helping each other out when we need help the most so that we can thrive down the road. And that's what Senator Wimberger is denying people with these words, with his actions. It's not about helping. It's about walling people off and preventing them from getting what they need so that they can thrive.
When you look at what they're working on instead in the legislature, not just that shameful resolution, but also there's a new proposed constitutional amendment that would curtail a governor's veto powers by prohibiting a veto that would lead to any increase in a fee or a tax. The move comes, of course, after Governor Evers used his partial veto last summer to increase school funding for public schools for the next 400 years because of the way that he was able to selectively veto the state budget bill. And look, we can have debates about whether any governor, any given governor, should have this power or that power. I'm just saying this is part of a noticeable, nakedly obvious trend of we want to take powers away from a governor who's not in our party, and we're going to give those powers right back to a governor as they did with Scott Walker when he first got elected. Again, the cynicism means nothing to them in terms of being exposed for what they are.
Give us a little historical context, Pat. I mean, this is what they did when Governor Evers was first elected. Remember that lame duck session where they went in and took all those powers away? And, you know, Governor Evers has done an incredible job of navigating this tight space and getting things done for the people of Wisconsin, despite this legislature that refuses to bring even Democratic-authored bills. I don't know if you all know this, but if a Democrat authors a bill, the likelihood that it's actually going to make its way to a place where they can debate it and talk about it is like less than 1%. So,
and by the way, not always like that. Not always like that at all. In, you know, prior to 2010, Republicans, when they were in the minority, did not necessarily have to go hat in hand. We worked together and put forward a sharply higher percentage of Republican-authored bills than they have with Democratic-authored bills since. Because, again, it's a completely different mindset of how you're supposed to govern versus how you're supposed to, you know, how you want to rule. And ruling appears to be more important than governing for these folks.
Yeah, I'm tired of it.
Well, you have to take it up. You have to take it up with the people who proposed this constitutional amendment, which would include Dan Knoedl, the Senate Elections Committee chair, State Representatives Amanda Nedweski, who said if you get pregnant, it's your fault. Mm. Joel Kitchens, the veterinarian amateur OBGYN, and Shea Sortwell. So it's folks from over on your part of the state that are at the base of, again, not really interested in governing so much as always engaging in nonstop election year politics.
I love how you brought this full circle, Pat, because that is the foundation of Women Win Wisconsin. As we are looking at what happens in November, women are coming out of the woodwork, and not just women, but folks who see this vision of Wisconsin the way that we want it to be. And they look at Joel Kitchens and recognize how ridiculous his statements were. They look at Shea Sortwell. Even the Republicans don't like Shea Sortwell. He is off the hook. Like, he's wildly crazy. He says unbelievable things. Somebody else needs to represent the people in that district because he does not. It's all of northeastern Wisconsin. We've got candidates chomping at the bits, just waiting for these new maps. We're going to get news on the maps today. And certainly by mid-March, we are going to know exactly where we live, and we're going to have people who are ready to go. So let's do this.
It is indeed. So follow that. We'll get all those updates, not just on Up North News, but across the Civic Media Radio Network as well. And speaking of Civic Media, it's Thursday. That tells me one Luke Mathers ought to be toddling in here in just a moment or two to tell us what all you can expect on this fine radio network, where we will wrap things up for our Thursday morning in just a bit. You're Up North. Number one song this day in 1964 by the Beatles. You guys are the best backup group imaginable. We really have to do a talent show one of these days. Luke Mathers is along now to tell us all about so many great things to hear on the Civic Media Radio Network. I would contend starting with public service announcement coming up this morning with Dr. Lyerly, Greg Bach, and Jane Matinere. Wouldn't you agree, Luke?
I would never disagree with that.
We love talking about women's health issues with Greg.
Always. Because here the thing is, on more than one occasion, they have apologized to me for talking about what seems to be graphic details. I'm like, no, I am learning.
Yes. I had one of our callers tell me that one of the topics that we talked about was something that he and his wife had experienced, and we explained it in such a way that he, for the first time, understood it and had to pull over to the side of the road because he was crying because it meant so much to him.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, I'm familiar with the feeling of having a doctor explain something that you don't quite understand about what is going on. And when a doctor can explain it in plain English, I mean, it really is a big deal. And so, no, we appreciate what you're doing. And poor Greg has had to put up not just with, you know, all of the women's health discussions. He's put up with, you know, Mr. Colonoscopy over here from earlier this week. So we're taking care of all the health angles.
Yeah,
all
Luke, of those angles. What's your health condition?
See, I was raised by nurses. So the dinner room talk, dinner room conversations would all be from work. And I'd be like, no, I'm eating right now. Please don't talk about this at the dinner table. So I've pretty much heard it all. My sister is a nurse. My sister-in-law is a nurse. So I'm very much around the healthcare field. And I get to hear a lot of the not necessarily complex things broken down, but the horror stories sometimes that nurses have to go through. So
there was so much pus. Gravy.
I might have. I might have told this story already. Some good friends of ours came to visit while Sherry was in med school, and she was getting set to give a lecture. All the students had to give presentations on one thing or another, and she was giving a gynecological related lecture. Now, these are, again, the days before PowerPoint. So our friends walk in, and there's a rack of slides. It's going to be an actual slideshow. And I remember this friend of ours thinking, oh, you know, a slideshow about women's health. And he picks up a slide to look at it closely, thinking that, you know, there's going to be a cheap thrill involved. And instead, he was like, ah! He couldn't put that slide down fast enough, going, wait, that happens there too? Yes. Yes, it does. That's what healthcare is all about.
My mom used to work for a company that produced mammogram machines. Is that, what do they call it? What is their official name?
Mammography?
No, that's like that's fancy handwriting, Pat.
But let's just go with mammogram machines.
Mammogram machines. Yeah, and in those pamphlets, there were pictures of mammograms happening, and I remember telling my friends, like, "Oh, cool!" I'm like, "No,
no."
And at 11, I was
squish.
Like, "At 11, I was able to like be like, this is not what you think it is. It's it's not like finding a dirty magazine in the forest. This was."
Yes.
This changed my life. I'm like, this is what happens. My mother's like, this is what we do.
This is real. This is the real world. So again, public service announcement coming up 11 o'clock. Yes.
Yes.
Across.
It's going to be amazing.
Okay. With Matt and Air on air. So there, show number one promoted. Number two, Luke, your choice.
My choice. All right. Perfect. Well, the big one this week, Busted Pencils moving to 5 days out of the week.
Excellent.
So you can listen to Busted Pencils in the 7 p.m. hour across the Civic Media Radio Network. Host Dr. Tim Slecker and Johnny Lupinacci break down talking about education, and they're educated educators talking about education. And you can listen to their show across the Civic Media Network at 7 p.m. Monday through Friday.
I think your wordplay struck Greg.
That was fun.
They refer to themselves as the educated educators talking education. So
it's nice.
It works.
A little bit of a tongue twister sometimes, but and then the big event over the weekend, we've got number two in the nation, Purdue Boilermakers coming to the Kohl Center. So the Badgers got to take care of business on the road this evening against Nebraska, but you can tune in across four different Civic Media stations on Sunday morning for a top 10 matchup and a pretty much crowned for the Big Ten at this point. Number two, Boilermakers coming to the Kohl Center on Sunday morning. And the number six, Wisconsin Badgers, hopefully going to be able to defend home court and take care of business against Purdue.
And you can hear the game against Nebraska tonight and then Purdue this weekend on locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, news from the center in Richland Center, Lake Air in Amory, and WRJN in Racine. Yes, Mr. Bach.
Pat, can I tell my joke for I told you this morning?
Yes.
Hey, Pat, who did the Bucks play? Not the Bucks, the Badgers play recently.
No, it was actually the Marquette women.
Okay,
and
Marquette women,
night.
Just go with me. Marquette, who did Marquette lost, women? What was
they
that?
Lost last night. Wow. They went to Nebraska and lost at Creighton.
Did you know that school has a little shop there that sells like little trinkets, very expensive trinkets? It's called Creighton Barrel.
Where's the rim
pause
shot?
Pause for silence is not any problem with your radio. It's completely intentional.
Hold on.
I would say the comedy comes from Greg's reaction.
Please understand that this is not a representative sample of what you'll find at the Laughing Tap. Details coming up tomorrow.
See, the comedy wasn't in the one-liner. The comedy was in Greg's reaction of giving the one-liner and just nothing.
I'm so...
And the setup, the whole setup was
it's three-dimensional. Oh yeah, yeah. Just
the, I was, I'm like,
them
I'm like,
knowing that they were gonna stumble over it, and just
especially
the,
when
it
he took advantage of my dementia. Like, can I tell the joke I told earlier? I'm like, I have long since forgotten what that was. Greg, sure, go for it.
You guys
I don't remember
don't
what I had for breakfast 3 hours ago.
You guys just don't understand. I'm deconstructing comedy to understand the masses and put out the word of all people that we're all one.
In other words, the political equivalent of that is if you're talking process, you're losing. So just make the speech, just tell the joke, as the case may be. A couple other quick sports notes. The Bucks lost in Portland. Dame Lillard's first game back, 119-116. They're in Dallas on Saturday. And the Packers hired Jeff Hafley, the head coach at Boston College, to be their new defensive coordinator. So get your hashtag ready to hashtag fire Jeff Hafley whenever the Packers lose their first game. Luke, I think that's how this officially works now.
No. Oh, no, come on. Please no. Don't.
All we are saying is give Jeff Hafley a chance.
Trust the process.
This is how I know you're from Minnesota, because you just sounded exactly like a Vikings fan right there.
Yeah, sounded just like your classic bandwagoner. Yep. Thank you all so much. Luke,
have a great
stellar
weekend,
work as always.
You see you later, Luke.
Rest of the week. All right, and we'll welcome all of you back again tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., live from Lake Wissota across the Civic Media Radio Network here up north. Have a great day.